Hej och välkomna till presentationspodden. Jag heter Caroline Norbeli och jag driver den här podden för att sprida kunskap om stress. Jag gör också det här för att jag vill ta reda på hur presterar man och mår bra och hur lever man i den här världen och mår bra. Ja, jag vill inte att det här försnacket ska bli typ som förra, om ni nu kommer ihåg dem. Det tenderar ju bli så att jag ältar kring att jag ska åka på det här retreatet. Och just nu sitter jag nästan i min resväska för att jag måste sitta i sängen och spela in. Jag är hemma nu och hela familjen är hemma och imorgon ska jag åka. Och den enda platsen jag kan hitta är sängen som ger bra ljud. Och det är ju viktigt. Japp, imorgon åker jag och när du lyssnar på det här då har hela retreatet redan startat igång och det ska bli så skönt för att det är som att hela mina dagar går ut på att fundera över det här retreatet och det ska bli underbart att möta de här människorna som har signat upp sig. Det är 9 stycken och varav en har jag träffat någon gång, en känner jag lite grann, men de andra är helt obekanta. Så spännande. Och det, jag har ju gjort det där många gånger, så det är inte det jag är nervös över, men jag vet inte vad det är, för att jag blickar ut över min resväska och där har vi så mycket kläder. Jag vet att min man kommer snart komma upp och bara herregud, du kommer ta bort hälften. Jag gillar att resa travel light, men det, jag tror att det är lite sådär när man är nervös att man garderar sig för varje grej som kan hända. Och så fort jag blir lite nervös så plockar jag ner en ny topp, en ny t-shirt och det är bara fyllt på. Och det är också typiskt att min mamma åkte in på sjukhus för att hon har drabbats av antingen kristallsjukan eller tia. Och hon är där nu och det bara skriker i mitt hjärta att jag hade velat vara där hos henne. Men det går inte. Jag ska åka jättetidigt morgon bitti. Jag kan inte hålla på och flaxa fram och tillbaka tyvärr. Och hon säger att hon klarar sig jättebra, men jag hade ju velat vara en bra dotter och varit där och visat henne att jag finns där. Men nu sitter jag här istället i min packning och spelar in den här podden. Jag kommer givetvis ringa henne hela kvällen och mina barn kommer ringa henne medan jag är borta och sådär. Men det är helt okej med henne, men man blir ju orolig. Hon är över 80 och att de inte riktigt har fastställt vad det är. Ja, och det gör ju ännu mer att jag packar och packar och packar och packar för mycket och oroar mig och har svårt att fokusera. Ni fattar. Men jag tror det kommer bli jättebra med mamma och hon var så nöjd med sjukhuset. Så ja, jag får ha tillit till att det ordnar sig. Och hon är väldigt stark så det kommer nog gå bra. Det var en kund som jag hade förra veckan som sa någonting, eller vi konstaterade jag och hon jobbar på ett ställe där hon ger mycket av sig själv och hon har lätt för att hamna i utmattning, men det var kärnan av vårt samtal var så bra och jag tänkte att jag skulle dela med mig av det till er. För vi kom på att hon arbetar ju där på hennes jobb där hennes uppgift är att hjälpa människor. Hon är inte där för att tillgodose chefen och kollegorna. Och det gör ett sånt stort skifte. Ett skifte som kan vara skillnaden på om man är på väg att matta ut sig eller få för hög stress. För när man börjar tillgodose andra, bara ge av sig själv utan att veta om det är bra eller dåligt och liksom så här, levererar till chefen och till kollegorna eller till kunden utan att känna efter själv i magkänslan att jag gör ett bra jobb. Och då kan man också gå villovägar och tappa sig själv. Och det är då hög stress kommer. Och ja, ofta när man hamnar i de här i hög stress och när man börjar få tunnelseende så tappar man ju den förmågan att se vad som är. Så vi sa det, jag och hon, att hon skulle komma ihåg det, att hon inte jobbar för att andra ska se att hon är duktig, utan att man arbetar för att man tycker att det är kul eller meningsfullt eller tjäna pengar eller vad det nu är. Och för att i hennes fall då hjälpa människor. Så jag tänker för dig som lyssnar att det kan ju vara så att du också har lätt att tappa din kärna. Ditt varför du jobbar och att du börjar liksom titta på vad vill andra, vad vill andra ha av mig nu? Då är det jätteviktigt att se det, ta tillbaka den känslan och, eller vad säger, ta tillbaka makten och känna att du jobbar för att du vill och du levererar det resultatet som du tycker är bra. Och är det så att man har väldiga problem med det och du känner igen dig jättemycket i det här jag säger och att du springer runt på alla bollar och bara liksom vill att chefen ska se och chefen eller kollegorna ska tycka att du är bra, så kanske det här är något jättebra att ta upp med chefen, att det här är ett problem. Så kom ihåg att du jobbar inte för att andra ska tycka att du är duktig. Du jobbar för att du tycker att, ja, ett, det kanske är kul. Det kanske är utmanande. Du jobbar för att tjäna pengar bara. Det övrigt är jättetråkigt. Så fokusera på det. Fokusera på ditt varför. Det här varför du sökte det här jobbet från början. Jag har 2 platser kvar i min coaching och är du intresserad av att börja skapa förändring, kanske börja redan nu eller till hösten, så ja, jag jobbar ju med kunder med stress, prestationskrav och även att komma närmare sig själv. Och jag tänkte, som jag har gjort några gånger nu, läsa upp en av mina fantastiska kunders referenser. Så, genom min coaching hos Caroline så har jag lyft min vardag bort från stress och ångest. Caroline har på ett professionellt sätt stöttat mig i att hitta vad just jag behöver i form av tankar och beteende för att hitta tillbaka till mitt glada, trygga och energifyllda jag. Caroline coachar med hjärtat och är mycket närvarande i samtalen. Tusen tack Caroline för att du har hjälpt mig till en ny skönare plats att vara på. Sen har jag ju också min kurs som finns på min hemsida. Alltså en kurs som du kan sitta hemma i din egna takt och arbeta med det som jag tror är de absolut främsta verktygen för att skapa förändring och minska stress. Kursen innehåller också meditation och dessutom i slutet av den här kursen så får man boka upp ett samtal med mig och det samtalet är i 30 minuter där vi knyter ihop säcken och ser var du har kommit någonstans av att ha gjort den här kursen och dina nya tankar och idéer. Så är du intresserad av det, gå in på carolinorbeli.com så hittar du min kurs där. Och ja, hjärtligt välkommen att testa.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Till det här avsnittet har jag intervjuat Vivian Vosmediano. Det här avsnittet handlar också om trauma. För dig som inte har lyssnat på förra avsnittet kan göra det efter det här avsnittet. Jag har tänkt nu mer att försöka att lägga avsnitten efter varandra, alltså två traumaavsnitt, för att ni ska få en djupare syn, alltså olika synvinklar på trauma och hur man kan jobba med det. Jag vill bara säga att det avsnittet som jag hänvisar till i intervjun är avsnitt 258 med Filip Bromberg, där vi pratar om psykedeliska svampar. Så är ni intresserade av det, är alltså avsnitt 258. Vivian har själv gått igenom ett stort trauma som vi pratar om, och hon arbetar idag som coach, trauma och life coach helt enkelt. Och jag gör ju intervjun på engelska. Jag är aldrig särskilt nöjd över mig själv. Det är extremt svårt att skifta från svenskan till engelskan, och jag förstår inte varför jag har sådana problem just när det gäller mina inspelningar. Men alltså inspelningen, alltså när jag sitter där och ska få fram de engelska orden, så poppar det mest svenska ord upp och jag trevar mig fram. Men jag tror ändå att Vivian klarar den här intervjun så bra, så att det här blir superintressant. Så lyssna till en härlig kvinna. Lyssna till Vivian. Welcome to Prestationspodden, Vivian.
Hello.
In this interview, I would like to know more about trauma. But first of all, I want to know more about you. Who are you and what are you doing for a living?
I am a trauma-informed life and wellness coach. I have been working as a coach for over 10 years. I was born in Baghdad, Iraq. I'm of Chaldean nationality. It's one of the oldest cultures out there. I moved out of Iraq when I was 1.5, and I grew up in the U.S. from 1.5 until the age of 41. I lived in the U.S. and I moved out of the U.S. in 2020, and I've been living in Spain, Mexico. I lived in Costa Rica all of last year, and I've been here for the last 6 months. I'm married to a Swede. We've been together for 9 years, and I also hold plant medicine retreats working with trauma in Costa Rica.
Oi. I want to start to talk about your upbringing. Tell me more about Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah, so the Jehovah's Witnesses was a very big part of my life growing up. My mom became a Jehovah's Witness when I was 6, and I became a Jehovah's Witness when I was 16. My two older sisters did not become Jehovah's Witnesses, neither did my father. They remained Catholic, and I followed my mom's lead. I got married to another Jehovah's Witness when I was 24, And then I got disfellowshipped in what they call shunning when I was 32. And then they kicked me out of the religion. And I did try to come back into the religion for 2 years because it was my entire community and it was everything I ever knew. So I just wanted to come back in.
And they refused you.
Yeah, they did. You have to write letters to get back into the religion. And I was denied I wrote 4 letters and they were denied.
How was that for you, getting denied?
It was terrible. My anxiety level was super high. My IBS was really bad. I just had so much health issues that were just like anxiety attacks at least once a week. Just really, really bad. Yeah.
It was everything you know and...
Yeah, and that was also, so I have the religious trauma that I have in my background. I also was raised in a house with domestic abuse, verbal abuse, and substance abuse. My father was also incarcerated at one time, and my mother was 14 and my dad was 32 when they got married. So it was very like a tumultuous kind of whole situation in my upbringing. That on top of the religious trauma that I had.
Uh-huh, so it was your... okay. But was he into the religion?
My father, no, he was not. So he really opposed my mother when she became a Jehovah's Witness.
Okay.
He started drinking and then beat the shit out of her until he was put in jail a couple times.
Oy.
Yeah, so I saw that growing up.
How was your relationship with your mother before she was a Jehovah's Witness?
I don't know much about my mom before she was a Jehovah's Witness because I was 6 when she became one.
Mm-hmm.
My father said she was an angel, but you know, I don't really know who she was before.
And what did she become?
Yeah, so she's like very high up there in the narcissism spectrum. But Jehovah's Witnesses in general are very narcissistic. It's a perfect religion for narcissists because they believe that they have the only true religion. And they also say, we're in the truth. So if you meet another Jehovah's Witness and you're a Jehovah's Witness, instead of saying, are you a Jehovah's Witness? He would say, are you in the truth? Because they're that positive that they have the only true religion.
Oh.
It's pretty messed up, but it's a little bit about the religion.
What does a Jehovah's Witness believe in? I don't know much about that.
Yeah, so they believe that we're living in the last days, which is the majority of the people that, the religious people out there, that Armageddon is right around the corner, that the earth in whole is going to be destroyed, except for the Jehovah's Witnesses. They're going to be the only people that are going to be living on the earth, and that the whole earth is going to be brought back to paradise. Like it was back when the Garden of Eden was here, when Adam and Eve was here. So they try to recruit people. They try to knock on people's doors, stand in the street corners, just try to bring people into the religion and save them essentially from getting destroyed at Armageddon. They also don't do blood transfusions. They also don't celebrate any holidays, no birthdays. They dress very modestly, and there's a very wonderful amount of people that are in the organization, good-hearted people. The religion teaches really good morals, being kind to people. It's not all bad. No religion is all bad. There's always some good aspects of religion. And yeah, I think that some people are meant to be in religious groups like that for the rest of their lives. There's some people that are sheep, and then there's people that are wanting to take charge and don't want to follow. The majority of the world is very good at following, and they don't want to think for themselves. So for people that don't want to think for themselves, have that critical thinking, or even listen to their gut instincts, religion or cults is a perfect place. They also shower you with love bombing, as they call it. So if you are a single woman that lost a child or a husband, and you're new to the religion, or you're new to the area, they will just shower you with love, invite you over for meals, and just really, really just become your spiritual family. You're surrounded by all of these, they call them brothers and sisters from all over the world, and it feels like an international family because there are Jehovah's Witnesses from all over the world. But the moment you do something that is not approved by them, or you decide not to be a part of the religion anymore, you do some research of your own, you find out this is actually not the truth, then they turn their back on you. So you might have been a best friend with somebody in one of the congregations, but the moment you find out, you learn for yourself that this is not the truth, and you go your own way, that friend is no longer your friend anymore.
And how was it for you to connect with your gut feeling after such a long time of disconnection?
It was scary, but I knew I had to do it. Mm. I knew I had to do it. And the people, I have a YouTube channel where I interview people, and there's so many people that I just interviewed a woman this morning. She's like, I was scared to death when I first left, but that feeling goes away.
Are they threatening you?
They don't threaten. There's people that write a letter to them saying that they don't want to have them bother them anymore because they will try to bring you back into the religion, saying, wouldn't it be nice if you come back in? You'll get all of your friends and your family will love you again. I mean, there's so many people that they are the only one in their family that decided to leave, and their brothers and their sisters and both of their parents are still in the religion, and they just don't talk to them anymore. And they might go the rest of their life, 20, 30 years, never speaking to their siblings or their parents again because of the religion.
Have you any contact with your mom today?
She has not spoken to me in 11 and a half years.
That's say a lot. I mean, how strong it is.
Yeah.
She's brainwashed.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole religion is brainwashed. Mm. And once you get out of it, it's about deconstructing the brainwashing and then just critical thinking. What is real? What do I believe? And I tell people it can change from today to tomorrow. Just constantly question yourself.
What do you believe about, I mean, as they thought that Armageddon is coming and you are going to be the only one. What's your belief?
You know what? If Armageddon comes this evening, I've lived a pretty great life. I'm not worried about that. I'm very much like living in the present moment. I think it's so important when we're talking about stress here. Stress is all about worrying. And if we're constantly on that worry mode, we're not present at all, which is sad. And that's the religion. It's always about worrying about, and it's like throw
my
all.
My God!
Yeah,
they could invite us all. I mean, I understand that that is very effective. It is.
They have a line that says, "Throw your burdens on Jehovah." I mean, it's kind of a common thing with all religions. Like, throw all your worries on God. He'll take care of you. But you actually have to take care of yourself and deal with your own things that you've been through. If you're ill, if you have MS or sclerosis or any autoimmune disorder, it's like if you don't, you're just putting it on God. Like, He's not going to fix you. You have to take care of it yourself. You have to ask yourself, why am I feeling this way? Very few people go in and ask themselves, why am I not able to sleep? Why am I having cramps all the time? Why is my head always hurting? They go to the doctor. Before they even critically think, before they ask themselves, they think the doctor's going to have the answer. Most of the time, the doctor's just going to give you a medication. He's not going to ask you what's happening at home. He's not going to ask you if you've had anything happen to you before that's causing your health ailments. It's always like, prescription, here you go. At least in the U.S., it was very, very much like that. They're not very much about asking what's going on in your life.
If we're going to talk more about trauma, one of your trauma is sexual abuse.
Yeah.
Tell me, how have you worked with that?
So I've had three cases of sexual abuse in my preteens or teens to my late teens, and my first time it was very suppressed, and the only person that knew about it was my ex-husband. And then when I got married to my second husband 9 years ago, he was the only other person that knew about it. And then I did ayahuasca shortly after that in 2015, and I did two ayahuasca journeys and I felt nothing. And the third time I did it, the first thing that really came up when I had my full-on experience was my sexual trauma. And I just, holy shit, that was like, what in the world? Was I really suppressing it that much? And once that came up for me, there was so much more that just kept on coming up. And I saw how that was affecting my life, because I think we think certain things that happen to us just because it happened so long ago. I mean, I work with people that have been sexually abused by grandparents when they were infants in a crib. And they're like, that doesn't bother me anymore. I'm 44 years old. Are you sure it doesn't? We really like dissect everything to the core of the experience and how that child feels, because as an adult, you can just bypass it so easily. Oh, it wasn't that bad. It was like two times or whatever it was. But yeah, can you imagine a child, how vulnerable a child is, and that you always like have to go back to how you were feeling when you were that young. It's so easy to, like I said, discredit how we were feeling when we were children living in this adult body. But once we were like, oh, if you had a child and that was happening to your child, how would that child feel about that? Then, oh, you're right. It's so much more than that. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So that was the beginning of my healing journey with my trauma, was back in 2015. And since then, it's been, yeah, lots of coaching, lots of therapy, working with lots of different plant medicine. And I feel like I'm in such a good place. There was so much shame, guilt, all around that area as well.
Hmm. And when you say plant medicine, what is that?
So I specifically work with psilocybin mushrooms.
We have had a person here speaking about psilocybin.
So yeah, psilocybin mushrooms, and then I also work with mescaline, which is from a cactus. Mescaline is in two different cactuses, peyote and San Pedro. And then I also work with LSD or acid. Yeah, so those are the three plant medicines I use on my retreat. I do not work with ayahuasca. I don't call myself a shaman. I just am a guide. I provide people a safe space to explore what's happened to them in the past and how it's affecting them.
How does those plant medicine help you see what happens?
When you go in with an intention and you're in a safe set and setting, if you're going into, let's say, you and I work together and you told me about a specific situation that you know is affecting you, but you've been to all the therapy and it hasn't really helped you as much as you wanted to, and you're ready to like jump over the bridge to get to where you need to, and you feel like you've really worked on it really much, and then we work on it together through this method that I learned called compassion inquiry. I'm bringing you into your body, helping you feel the different emotions, going back to different memories, and then we do this journey together. And this will allow you to really tap into your subconscious in a way that you're not able to tap into on a normal level, if you can say. And it really allows you to look at yourself much more compassionately. And it allows you to create different images that also you're not allowed to create, or you can't create when you're awake. It's almost like being in a very deep dreamlike state. That I would say that's kind of the experience. Of course, you can have these experiences, or you can take these substances and not have these experiences if you're doing them for recreational purposes. Let's say you took a tab of acid and you go to an amusement park or a party. You can still have a good experience, but it's going to be a very different experience than if you're going to go specifically with an intention to work on something that has affected you from your past. If you're taking, you hear about these people that have these bad trips, and that's because they're most likely taking them just to get high. They're with new people or at a party or at a wrong setting, and things can get sketchy. So your insecurities can come up, anxiety can come up. And if something is coming up and you've had some really deep trauma, being with new people in a party is like the worst thing. I mean, I've heard people going to the grocery store, going on the train, going on a bus, and they're like full on tripping. This terrible, terrible idea. You're going to have a quote unquote bad trip, but you created that bad trip. If you're going in with a proper set and setting and you're in a safe environment, it's a very different kind of experience.
I understand. And I will let the listener know, because I have another episode with where they explain the side effect. They can go and listen to that, and I want to continue. I am interested, I think they can listen to that. It's more like... when you left the Jehovah's Witness, how long did it take for you to get stronger? I mean, when did you get back to back? You had to sort of invent a new life.
I did.
How was that?
And even though I was trying to get back into the religion, I had this really strong gut feeling that I wanted to make this epic life outside of the religion after I got divorced. And so they make you in the religion, they make you feel like you're nothing without them. You're going to be a hooker, a drug dealer, a street walker. Like, you're literally going to be a piece of shit. And when you're out of the religion, you're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to They make you feel stupid. They make you feel small. They want to keep you in the religion. So when I left, I don't know, I just had this like willpower of I'm going to do something with my life. And I started building a following on Instagram. And this is when Instagram was brand new, 2012. I started building a following pretty quickly. And I mean, I lost my audience in 2018. I got my account hacked and deleted. I had almost 200,000 followers. That was back then. And that's how I met my husband, was through Instagram. But I was one of the first healthy recipe developers. So I was creating healthy recipes with different... healthy ingredients, protein powders, stevia, all this other stuff. Like, this is, like I said, 2012, 2013. This is a new time of Instagram. Came out with I moved to Chicago from Detroit to Chicago, and I launched my first e-cookbook. And then I started a project called Project Fit Nation, where I lived with families as a wellness coach. So from 2013 to 2016, I lived with families all over the U.S. and Canada and Nigeria. And I would live with these families and I would teach them how to create healthy recipes based on what their family wanted and needed. And I started building this like amazing life outside of the religion. And I started doing all this amazing stuff. I was really like just getting creative by myself. And I had the support of the online community. And back then, I keep on referring to back then because Instagram is and social media is not what it was back then as it is today. It was real. It was a community. No one was faking it. No one was photoshopping things. It was just real. And I created a pretty great life outside of the religion. And that's when I was like, I don't need the religion anymore. And I'm just going to live my own life. And I stopped trying to be part of it anymore. I'm like, who am I kidding? I was just trying to get back into the religion for my mom. I promised her I would get back in. And at one point, I was just like, I was trying to always make her happy. It's not worth it anymore. She never was happy. So I've been trying this for my whole life. It's finally time to make myself happy. So I had to detach myself from her mentally. So the winter of 2013, December 2013, I drove 2.5 days from Chicago to Southern California. And during that time, I had so much time to think on those long drives. And I just decided I'm not going to be a Jehovah's Witness anymore.
Cool. Do you think there are many who wants to get out of there but can't?
Oh, yes. So they have these abbreviations. There's physically is PMO and POMO, physically in, mentally out, And there's people that are physically in, mentally in, and then there's people that are physically out, mentally out. So there's a lot of people that are in the organization, in the religion, that they really know this is not the religion for them. This is not the truth. This is not the right religion. They just want to be out. But maybe they're married to a Jehovah's Witness. Maybe they have kids. Maybe their entire family is Jehovah's Witnesses. And they know that if they leave, they're all going to not talk to them anymore.
And with your YouTube channel, where you interview people who have left, why do you do it?
My why is because, like I said, they make you feel like you're going to be useless without them. So my YouTube channel focuses on people that are living a pretty good life outside of the religion. So they're happy. They've worked through the very scary time. Mm. They might be a little bit scared still, but they'll talk about it. So the moment you become public about being an ex-Jehovah's Witness, then your entire community definitely ostracizes you. Like if they didn't shun you before, they're 100% going to shun you. So there's this huge fear about just talking publicly about it. Mm. So the moment I made my first YouTube video about being an ex-Jehovah's Witness in 2018, my mother sent me a text message, just random text message, saying that she disowned me. She's like, I'm not your mother anymore.
Nay.
As if she even was my mother before. She stopped talking to me in 2011.
Mm.
So like,
no difference.
No. This was like, this was perfect for me to be, this is the end. This was like, okay, you're dead to me. Thank you for saying that. I can definitely put you away now. That was the last time she reached out to me. And so there are a lot of people that are in the religion, but that don't want to be.
Do you have friends who you wish could leave?
I mean, it's like I said, it's been 11 and a half years. I do think a lot of people. I see them on social media. I reached out to a girl that I was in her wedding in 2011. And I was like, oh my gosh, I just found you on Facebook. I hope you're doing good. I see you have two kids now. And she's like, oh, are you back? And I said, back to Michigan or back to the Jehovah's Witnesses? I said, neither, but I'm living a great life. And that doesn't mean we can't be friends. She's like, oh, I'm so sorry. We've got a lot of new insight, like a lot of new light, a lot of new information. Check out the JW.org, which is the Jehovah's Witness website.
Yeah.
So no interest of actually being my friend, but yeah, it's just all about trying to get back into the religion.
I can't really even understand how it has been for you. And also to leave something you've been so close to. I mean, people have a hard time leaving their job, changing. I mean,
yeah.
What a change for you.
Yeah, it was part of my path. It was part of my path.
Yeah.
I'm actually really grateful for it. And what I thought was the worst thing that could have ever happened to me was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And if my husband didn't come into my life, I might have been back in the religion because it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy community. It's an easy kind of, once you're in it, you feel
held.
Yeah, you feel held.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What is a trauma?
Well, according to Gabor Mate, trauma is not what you've experienced. It's about how your body responded to the experience. Mm. So there are people that have been through traumatic experiences but have been less traumatized than other people. We all have different sensitivities. Not saying that if you were sexually abused, one of the big T's, that you didn't face some serious traumas, but we have all faced some traumas at some point or another, whether it's the big T's like physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, and then there's the small T's like being bullied at school, stuff like that when you were a child.
Do you think we inherit trauma?
Absolutely. Intergenerational trauma.
Uh-huh.
I feel very called to work and help people with intergenerational trauma because I personally had experienced that tremendously. I feel like I carried a lot of shame and guilt from my female ancestors down my lineage. As I mentioned, my mom was 14 when she got married. My grandmother was 11. When she got married. So intergenerational trauma very much runs in my family.
So, okay. Was it a setup at that point? Or?
You know, my mom says no, but I don't believe this kind of stuff. Yes, absolutely. You don't choose to get married when you're 14. Yeah. Mm.
Mm. And how do you work with inherited trauma?
Intergenerational trauma. I feel that once I actually get to know the person themselves, because it takes layers. So first I work with their own trauma. And then after I work with their own trauma, I get to understand their parents and how their childhood was and how they were raised. Because essentially a lot of parents are acting like small children. And as they get older, they even become more like children if they didn't work with their trauma. So whether it's the father just barely showing any emotions and completely shut off and almost acting like a little baby, or the mom, now she's like giving you a certain kind of energy, again, acting like a child. These, as the kids leave the house, they're like, who am I? What am I doing with my life now? And they turn back into the little children.
Is that common?
I definitely think so, yes. Yes. But also the intergenerational trauma, people don't really talk so much about it because there's so much that people, especially women, if let's say your mom was sexually abused by her uncle or grandfather and you didn't find out until you were in your 20s, but your mom developed an eating disorder. And you really weren't sure why she was binging or purging or always dieting. And you, of course, you want to be like your mom. So at the age of 10, you started dieting as well. And then you watched how your mom ate. And then you started watching how you ate, which turned into anorexia. And then you found out about bulimia, and that was your life until maybe you went into rehab when you were in your 40s. Or maybe you still have it. But it starts from your mom. And your mom, you really don't know why your mom had developed an eating disorder, but then you found out. And you know, in the 80s, it wasn't really an eating disorder. It was about dieting. But yeah, I work with a lot of people like that. Yeah.
They're so open with their... I mean, I try to. I'm trying. I don't want to talk about things like that with my children. Mm-hmm. Of course, they see what you're doing, but I mean, the other generation above us, they were like, "Oh, I'm on a diet again."
It's like, yeah.
It's incredible how they affect us and our bodies and how we see us. I mean, my mom, and I know many others, and she's like, "Oh, I am so ugly." I was like, "But she's very pretty." But I mean, telling things like that, it's incredible how that can affect you.
When you break it down, it's like, who was the first person to tell you you were ugly? Who did you hear that from? Oh, my mom used to tell me that. And how did you respond to her as a child? Oh, I didn't say anything because that was my mom. Mm. And she still says that to me to this day. Oh, okay. But it's the intergenerational trauma piece.
Mm.
And who knows, maybe her mom was slapping her across the face when she was saying that. So it was like two traumas together. So it's just this piece.
And trauma doesn't have to be that obvious either,
no.
Has it? I mean, just having a parent who shuts down, as you said earlier, who's not
emotionally unavailable.
There.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is very common, and I can also understand. I mean, as a grown up, you have to go through so much stress, and it's easy to shut down,
right?
Yeah,
and as I said, trauma is what happens inside of us as a response to what happens to us, and then there's the freeze, flight, or fawn response as well. Mm. And this freeze response is also associated with disassociation, which is a lot of people that they just, not only do they freeze, but they disassociate from their body. And you might feel like you're in a fish tank. You might feel like there's a glass wall in front of you.
Mm.
But that can go on into adulthood as well.
Mm.
And you don't know what's happening until, then you read about it, you're like, oh my goodness, this has been something I've been dealing with for my whole life. And now I'm learning about it. I'm normal. It's okay. Then there's ADHD. Everyone is on the spectrum of ADHD now. But it all stems from childhood trauma and the emotionally unavailable parent. And depression, I don't believe depression and anxiety is inherited either. There's no such thing as low serotonin levels. That is all a myth that was made up by pharma, which is a multi-bazillion dollar industry.
I agree. I was about to write a book about that, actually,
okay.
Together with a friend and a listener, sort of, who contacted me. Because when you're on serotonin, it's very hard to get off.
Okay, yes, absolutely.
They are not telling you how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they want you to fail somehow, because if you're going to go off serotonin, so you have to go extremely slowly.
Yeah.
But they say, no, you can go off from 50 milligram and it's okay. And then the patient will fall, and
yes.
Then they will say, you had to start over again.
Yes, exactly.
It's such a, and they, it's like, do they get money? Do the doctors get money out of this? I don't know. Are they sponsored?
Absolutely.
It's like they are.
Yeah, these SSRIs, there's this video from after school. They showed like so from certain milligrams, there's not that much of a percentage drop from like 20 to 15 milligrams. It's not that huge of a percentage drop in your system. But from 5 milligrams to 0, it's like 64%. So you're crashing so bad. And then your symptoms can reappear. So you're having fogginess in the head. You're feeling nauseous. You can't sleep. They're like, oh, your trauma's coming back. You need to take the antidepressants. Presence again. Those are the side effects of the SSRI.
And also, for everyone who has SSRI, I mean, some people perhaps need that, and I don't want to say anything about that, but I think it's very hard to heal as a person when you are going on a high level of SSRI, because it's like you are so turned off, so you can't really get connected to your feelings. I read it on your website, true healing begins when we feel safe enough to connect to our intuition, gut instinct, emotions, and bodily sensations.
Mm-hmm.
And how that is impossible when we're turned off.
Exactly. Exactly. Or numbed. So let's say you enjoy drinking every night. Well, there you go. Or in the U.S., I feel like weed is a really big thing. Everyone's smoking weed, taking gummies to sleep. If you can't sleep, can you ask yourself, why can't you sleep? Is your stress really high? Is there work that you hate? Are you happy in your marriage? Is your kids driving you crazy? Like, get to the root cause of the thing. Don't just try to fix the sleeping symptoms. Part. Yeah, the symptoms, exactly.
So if we say someone is not feeling good, they have tried to work on themselves for a long time, talked with therapists, psychologists, but they don't really feel that they are cured somehow. Do you think it's because of a trauma or what's your?
So I feel that in Sweden, cognitive behavioral therapy is the number one, which is just focusing on the behavior. Which is it's good in the short term, but not in the long term. So it's not really getting to the root cause. For me, I think the most important is to get to the root cause of the problem that you're having. Asking the why until you get to the root cause. And like I said, sometimes this is even not even your trauma. This is intergenerational, your mom's trauma that you inherited as your own trauma. Like I said, an eating disorder, just to name a few things. So going back all the way to the past. And then going into the body and how the body is responding to it. So is there an immense amount of sadness that you're experiencing? Where do you feel it in your body? Oh, you feel it in your throat. Are you pushing it down every time you're feeling it? Like, how are you experiencing this? Or are you just allowing it to happen? Really getting in touch with how your body is responding to these emotions and just allowing them to be. I know this can be very difficult for a lot of people, but emotions are like waves. Once you ride them, they go away. They're not going to be there forever, even though they might seem like they're going to be. Another thing, and maybe this is not like the most positive thing, but a lot of therapists, psychologists, these people have not worked on themselves very much. So I personally feel you can only work with a therapist or a coach as much as they've worked on themselves. And at some point it's going to be like, nope, I can't do it anymore. You just feel energetically, like I just feel it with somebody. And this can be somebody who's been in the industry for a really long time and it doesn't matter. So, and it takes a while to find a good person to work with that you can actually feel connected to and feel safe. Because that safetiness, some people are just all about the time. Oh, your time is up. Sorry, my client's outside waiting for me. Okay, I was literally in the middle of tears. And then you're traumatized again. I had a friend recently who left her therapist's office in tears, traumatized. And yeah, time's up. I'm sorry, you have to leave.
We have had 15 minutes now.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so it's a lot of different things.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If someone think they perhaps have a trauma, what would be your tips or what can she or he do?
So the first thing, if somebody's like, I just want to get better. I just want to be good in a good place. First of all, I'm going to say, are you sure you're ready? Because this is going to take a lot of work. It's not a quick fix here. I'm not giving you an antidepressant. This is like the opposite of an antidepressant. This is really, you're ready to go in. The moment you're ready to go in and you're done numbing yourself and you really want to feel everything, your life is going to change. And the moment you do that and get curious about why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling, because anxiety is an inhibitory emotion. That means it's not a real emotion. There's the core emotions like anger, sadness, disgust, fear, excitement. Anxiety is on top of all of that. So the moment you get curious about your anxiety, stress, depression, why am I really feeling this way? Not very many people ask themselves this question. Like I said, they just go for a quick fix. Once you get curious about that, this is before you even see a therapist or a coach or a counselor. When you get curious about that yourself, you can start journaling. And journaling is a great method to really dump out the thoughts that are in your head and put them on a piece of paper. This is free. This is private. This is personal. This is you and you. And keep on asking yourself why, like they say the five whys. So once you're getting to one layer, get down to another layer. And there are people that have worked on a specific trauma for 10 years. And they're like, why am I still dealing with this? Well, you know what? Maybe you just need to see a different therapist. Maybe you need to see a body worker that gets more in tune with your body than your behavior. Because like I said, most therapists is just all in the head talk therapy, which is great. But some people actually need to be with their emotions that are trapped in their body.
Exactly. Do you know what EMDR?
Mm-hmm. EMDR, yep.
I have very positive
experiences.
Okay. And I have heard many having that too. It's quite incredible.
Yeah. EMDR, I feel like, is like right before the psychedelic journeys.
You do it before. Yeah,
if somebody's afraid of doing any kind of psychedelic work, EMDR is like, because it could also get into your memories that are subconscious.
Mm. It's just like you are looking at the finger and talking about the trauma at the same time with a therapist, sort of. And it's memories in your head. Is not longer, it's like your memory of what happened when you were little is in front of everything. It's like it's here right now. But when you do EMDR, you put it in the back or where it's supposed to be, and that's why you're calm. You know that it has happened, but it's not now, and I can be safe, and it's fantastic. Also, for the listener to know, I understand that you know what it is.
Yeah. It's great. It's great. And I think that that's definitely the next step, possibly for somebody who has done their traditional therapy, EMDR, or any kind of somatic experiencing, any kind of massage. And like I said, connecting yourself with your body is really important. I mean, our body is like 80% of our being, and people are so disconnected to what's going on in them. And with this method that I learned, which you can do yourself, when I work with people, it's like just stay with the sensations in the body. So if you're feeling anxiety come and you feel your chest tightening, I know it can be scary, but just kind of sit with it and breathe and feel that tightness. It's going to go away. And then there's going to be maybe another layer that's going to come up. Maybe there's tons of sadness that's going to come up. And maybe anger, however the emotions that are going to be coming up for you.
And some people have, and sometimes it's anger, which is in front of the sadness. Sort of. So you have to like get out of, go and kick your... go and kick someone. I was about to say, but I mean, it's like you can get rid of your anger somehow, like hit a pillow, and then the sadness will come. It's like we have layers, and the anger can stop the sadness, sort of.
Yeah, Eckhart Tolle, the one that wrote The Power of Now and A New Earth, he said wherever there's anger, there's always pain. Mm. And it's easier to show anger to people, especially men, very aggressive, very dominant, like anger. Men are not very vulnerable. They're not good at showing their emotions. So men that are usually very angry have a lot of pain that they're internalizing.
Yeah. And women, they get more like numb, I think, keeping it for themselves. But they get disconnected instead.
Or they can turn into a bitch. I'm sure we all have met these women that are just kind of like these really bitchy women that are just, they have something. You don't know what happened to them. There's something that happened to them in the past that they're just really putting on a mask, and this is the bitch face is way easier to show than your vulnerable face.
You mentioned Gabor Maté because that's you have your education by him, but he's like, I don't think many people know, or maybe they do, but he's like a guru when it comes
to
trauma. So that's a tip to read more about him and what his knowledge.
Yeah, he has written, I think his first book was In the Realms of Hungry Ghost. It's about addiction and how people rarely ask why the addiction. They're asking what's wrong with that person. Addiction, there is actually not a bad thing. It's helping people cope with something much deeper, whether it's addicted to work, addicted to medication, addicted to drugs, addicted to alcohol. When people are doing things in an addictive, like, anything can be addictive. It's your relationship to it. Whether it's working out, like I said, something healthier, or it's smoking marijuana or crack. It's same. If you're doing it all the time to numb it, then it's a bad thing. And sure, there's some healthier addictions like working out versus smoking crack, but at the end of the day,
it's just the same sort of
exactly, if you understand what I mean, because you're numbing your true emotions. So it's In the Realms of Hungry Ghosts, there's another one called Scattered Minds. It's about ADHD and how it originated, how ADHD originated. And then he also has a book called When the Body Says No. It's about how trauma turns into illnesses like MS, scoliosis, dementia, cancer. Fascinating book as well. Really highly recommend all these books. And then his newest book is called The Myth of Normal. Which is really great. And he wrote that with his son, and he's writing another book with his son too, like Saying Hello Again or something like this.
What is Myth of Normal about?
About trauma. And how it's like gone through the history, and how we've turned into a pill-consuming culture, a desensitized culture, and it was just really fascinating. It's like a 500-page book. I listened to it. It took, I think it's like 18 hours of listening. It's a Bible.
It's quite hard to listen to, though, because I fall asleep because he's so soft in his... I need to read it.
It's good.
I wish I had more time for this interview. I could talk to you for ages, but thank you so much for coming here. And if someone wants to connect with you, what's your...
They can find me on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. VivianVoss.com is my website. Vivian Voss Mediano, I'm on Facebook. Instagram, Vivian Voss. YouTube, Vivian Voss. And it's V-E-V-I-A-N, not V-I. So
I will write in the
description. All right, sounds great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Tack snälla du som lyssnar. Tycker du om podden, sprid den till andra. Det kan du göra genom att sprida den på dina sociala medier eller gå in på den här podcaster-appen där du lyssnar ifrån och lämna en recension. Jag blir också jätteglad för alla er som kommer med tips på gäster som jag ska intervjua. Och det kan ni göra genom att till exempel mejla caroline@prestationspodden.se eller gå in på min Instagram och skicka ett DM på Caroline Norbeli Coaching. Varmt välkommen att göra det, men framförallt ha en superhärlig sommarvecka här i Sverige. Vi hörs!